Welcome everyone. You are listening to Red Ice Creations Radio. This is Henrik Palmgren, recording from the west coast of Sweden. Thought-provoking and mind-opening internet radio, available worldwide at redicecreations.com. You are in for a real treat today because we have Michael Tesarian back with us on the program, and we are proud to announce that we'll be featuring Michael as a guest on the third Thursday of each month on Red Ice Creations Radio. And today we have The Outsider and the Guilt Complex as our overarching theme. But before we get to Michael, I'd just like to say thanks to Ted Tweetmeyer for speaking with us last week about some of the anomalies on Mars. And if you missed that show or any other of our previous programs, just go back into our archive and listen for free. We also have a subscriber section, a growing archive for all of you out there who want to hear more and dig deeper into some of these topics. This is also really the best way that you can support this website and the radio program. So we do need your help and support to keep going. Now let's get to today's program. Today we have Michael Tesarian with us on the line, and we are going to begin with program one of what I guess could be called our second series with Michael Tesarian. And we're proud to have him back with us on the show, now as a regular on Red Ice Creations Radio. And today's program is entitled The Outsider and the Guilt Complex. And I love the dedication Michael put into these programs, and I'm very proud to be a contact in this circuit that relays this information to you. So welcome back to the program, Michael, and thank you for joining us again.
Thank you, Henrik. It's lovely to be back, and certainly did enjoy the previous 6-7 shows that we did. They were so intense, but also, you know, again, this, as you say, this information is really, you know, applicable and practical and important for our age, you know. And I'd be sitting here in the dark, you know, if we didn't have people like yourself to really believe in it and to help get it across. So, you know, those were great shows, and I've had, I don't know if you know this, but I've had an overwhelming response from all parts of the world on specifically those shows, because as you know, I do a lot of shows, and yet the Red Ice series that we did have been just of great interest to a wider demographic. People from all age groups just received a email from a lady, you know, 63 years of age, has a completely new, you know, appreciation of music, you know, a totally new appreciation of relationships, you know, going on and on and on, telling me all about the incredible changes in her life, about the ways, you know, her own children in a different life. You know, this is a typical kind of email that I'm getting, and she specifically mentioned the Red Ice series. So, again, I'm seeing the practical results, the feedback coming in. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's wonderful, absolutely. And we have had a lot of good, positive feedback here also, and a lot of people are excited to have you back the program, Michael. And to kick things off here today, to you know, speaking of Hillary, I recently did an interview with a lady regarding the goddess, and we got into this very briefly, of course. But you know, finally we see Hillary Clinton move into the political center stage, and just as you have predicted, she is getting ready for 2008, right?
That's right. You know, this was a pretty easy prediction, really. I mean, you know, if one has ever tracked in the alternative movement, we are very, very conscious of the way that the Clintons in particular have been groomed from way back. You know, this is at the time of the round table. And so G. Edward Griffin and, you know, Beau Greitz and Eustace Mullen, anyone who's written seriously on this subject has always been tracking the progress of the Clintons. They're not just a little small, you know, American family from Arkansas, you know, who just decided one day to run for office. These are political loots of the massive and important Fabian Society of England. So we, you know, people have known decades ago, my prediction was just an echo, a re-echo of what many, many people have said. You know, even Paul, Daniel Hopsicker, you know, in his videos has covered the Clinton scandals down in Arkansas on a local level down there. You know, so there's people even in the local area who are hot on the trail of these arch criminals. So, you know, but of course this is a big Masonic Fabian game. So yes, they do have these people on board, and it's just a matter of time when they move them closer in. And I would very much encourage people to start getting into the concept of the goddess, to understand how these elite forces do make use of occult principles. Not that occult principles themselves are negative or that there's anything negative about goddess worship.
Yeah.
It's just that this is, again, part of the toolbox that's used on the human mind by these elites themselves that manipulate this kind of information. And so we have to understand how they work. We have to understand how Jordan Maxwell has said many times that these people operate on sovereignty law, on maritime law.
Yeah.
And maritime is British Admiralty law, which is the law of the oceans. And so just like a ship is born, when the man may construct the ship and the man may bring it to the dock, but when the bottle of champagne is broken and the ship is actually launched, it is launched on the waters. And the waters is always the symbol of the goddess or the female.
Yeah.
The same reason why you have a Statue of Liberty is female in Ellis Island. So the New World Order is their latest ship.
Hmm.
And we can say that men may have been, you know, instrumental. They may have been the goblins and the elves hammering away to create that edifice.
Yeah.
But when it is finally launched and properly initiated into the world, it is often on the waters of the female. And therefore, this was what David has talked about with Saramis, David Icke, as, you know, re-echoed the idea that Jordan has spoken about for years about the concept of Saramis and the Babylonian goddess cult.
Mm.
And also my understanding that the female is the birther, true birther, the symbol in symbolism anyway, let's say, birther of the New World Order. So though she may smile and though people may just, you know, dribble all over themselves thinking, fantastic, let's have a female president of America.
Yeah.
On a symbolic level, you're dealing with something very, very arcane and very deadly, because this will actually signal then the absolute birth of the New World Order throughout the world.
Hmm, very interesting. And, you know, I recently did an interview with a gentleman called Florin Diaco, and he has written a book called The Lost Millennium, and he based a lot of his research, allegedly, on this Russian scientist, Anatoly Fomenko.
Yeah.
And on chronology and history and so forth. And what's your take on that? Have you heard about that?
Oh, yeah. Been following that from day one. It's very interesting. And they themselves are also echoing earlier chronologists. They're not the only ones that have come up with this, as they're trying to say. I mean, obviously, they need to market their materials, so it's better to say that they came up with all of these ideas.
Yeah.
But, you know, even Emmanuel Velikovsky before them, and Commons Beaumont, the great English maverick, you know, and there are many, many other geniuses in this field who have doubted the past history. Without getting into all the details of Fomenko's work, you know, maybe we can do a show in the future on it.
Mm-hmm.
All I'd just like to say is that I welcome this kind of work, because at the very basic level, it is questioning the authenticity of official school-generated history.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what I do in my work, you know, is controversially the official paradigms. And here's a man from the inside. Here's a man and a whole team of Russian scientists from the within. I mean, you can't get further up the academic totem pole than these people. And they're questioning some of the most, you know, strongly held belief systems. And I can say one thing in particular that they do. People get onto YouTube and put in the word Fomenko and go and look at their own introductions. But the interesting thing, of course, for my work, especially with the Irish origins of civilization, is that Fomenko and these people are talking about that priests edited history. That a class of priests within the Christian, Judeo-Christian paradigm literally sat down and concocted, fabricated, and edited the history of the last 1,000 years. And in their book, even came up with the age of the Dark Age, which probably didn't even exist. So just from that point along, I go, stop right there, and let's just focus on this. That here are people at the top of the academic totem pole letting you know just how pernicious and vile and duplicitous and treacherous and hypocritical, you know, and deceitful are people within the church that's meant to be the bastion of purity and nobility and honesty and saving mankind.
Yeah.
And here they are exposed on the deepest level as being people who scribbled down and lied about chronology, lied about history. And it wasn't just that they were, you know, mathematical numbskulls who just happened to read the planets and the chronology wrongly because they were, you know, backward.
Yeah.
There's nothing backward about these people at all. They were very sophisticated, many of them. They were sophisticated enough to put the great astronomers into dungeons. So don't tell me that the people that they're putting into the dungeons, you know, and the people that they're murdering, like Giordano Bruno, that they don't know what these people are talking about. Of course they knew, out of ignorance. If it was ignorance, they wouldn't be seizing the men who had the knowledge about chronology and astrology, and then putting them in dungeons, would they?
Exactly.
You see, so it was based on knowledge. It was based on that they were hiding knowledge in order to mess with, and I want people to really listen to this, they were skewing history. They've already skewed history. Many of our previous shows, you and I, I've talked about the pre-Diluvian Age and the Age of Atlantis.
Yeah.
Well, that's only coming to light now, that they've hidden whole civilizations from us. They've lied about ice ages. They've lied about Atlantis. And you can bet your bottom dollar that they've lied about the Irish origins of civilization.
Sure.
And so Fomenko's work, you see, is fundamental to this, to prove that there was such treachery on such a massive worldwide level. Assists the work of people like myself who normally would not be listened to.
And just a side note there, I mean, does this change in any way where we kind of end up in regards to time, I guess, in regards to cosmic time, in regards to the age of Aquarius and all this stuff? Does that affect that?
They knew they could change the calendar, and they did. The Gregorian calendar, they messed with the calendar, they messed with the agricultural year.
Yeah.
But they knew it would be much harder to mess with the zodiac. My work goes into also how they did mess with the zodiac. But they knew that would be harder because there's peoples outside of their own power circumference that also had the same zodiac. So, you know, you couldn't really control that because there was too many people outside your power who believed in the zodiac.
Yeah.
But, you know, they were able to make fundamental changes, and they were able to make sure that people would be artificially kept in a state of ignorance so that even though they couldn't, if you're in ignorance, then you can't read the information even if it's there, right?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, the Bibles in the early churches were chained to the altars so that when anybody went and said, let me see that the priest is saying the right thing, let me study the Bible, they wouldn't let you do it. So the truth can be in front of you, but if you're ignorant, you can't. Your hands don't move. It's like having a plate of food in front of you, but you're not hungry. And then if you're hungry, but there's no food, well, then still your hands don't move. So that, you know, they do it in multiple ways. And the best way that they understood was not, yes, you can sequester knowledge, but then you'll always have elites even within your own system who might want to broadcast that knowledge. So hiding knowledge is only one of the weapons that they use.
Yeah.
They thought a better weapon is just to dumb down the entire world and keep them dumbed down for centuries. Then you can have the knowledge right in front of them. You can have the stars above their head. You can have teachers in front of them in their own villages and towns who might be printing and speaking the truth. But the people are ignorant, so forget it. It's like a man talking to pigs in a farmyard.
Yeah.
About the mysteries of the world.
Yeah, of life. Yeah.
It's like the whole concept of the watch that floats up on the beach. On a desert island, and the pygmies don't know what it is. Well, this is the situation of the world.
Yeah.
And I've already said that the coming of Pluto, and look where we are right now, we're already in that age, in the Capricorn right now, just today, in fact, which is 12/21. Let's point out the beauty and majesty of that day.
Yeah.
Today we're doing our interview on the solstice, first day of the solstice.
Exactly.
And Pluto is, getting stronger and stronger in the air, which represents inner archetypes, inner revelation. In this age of revealing. And here we have Fomenko turning up. And here we have 101 other revelations. People are sending me all the time emails and news articles about new revelations that deal with DNA and new revelations about the past and new revelations about new pyramids that are being discovered.
Yeah.
Here's, Fomenko doing his work, Anatoly Fomenko.
Yeah.
So it goes, so it's not just the small predictions I've made about Clinton and this kind of thing. We're talking about a massive revealing here, revelations in the next 5 years. That go to the heart of who we are as people and what our history is and what our whole origins are. And all we ask of people is that they're open-minded enough to make use of this new awakening, this new aperture that's opening so that knowledge will be put in front of you. Well, for goodness sake, then, don't cling on to the past prejudices. Let the human race be open and willing, and you've cried long enough and your forefathers have suffered long enough to wait for the time when the great meaning and the great secrets of why we live the lives we do would be handed down. Well, I'm here to tell you this is the very time right now that those answers are going to be put in front of you. And we as children of our forefathers need to be taking notes about this and listening up to the people who are mentioning what has happened on this planet. This is the time to have all ears pricked to know and to hear what is going on, because there's generations before us of people who've died in ignorance praying that one day the answers would come about what this world is, what this life is, and the lives that we're living. And we are now in that very age.
Amazing. Yeah, I totally agree. And when we were speaking before the show, you mentioned that this program's information is really a carry-on from the presentation that you did just a few months back in Los Angeles called The Future of Mankind. And for those who might not be familiar with this, can you kind of relay some of the stuff you went through there?
Sure, sure. I mean, that has been the biggest, do you know that over 80,000 people have watched that show
in
just the last 2.5 months or so?
Yeah.
I mean, I've just been inundated every single day. I get about 200 emails a day from people all over the world, and a good majority of them have been about this, web stream.
Amazing.
On Google, which is the future of mankind. Did you know that when I walked in, that it was 100 degrees that day? we arrived, we'd actually done the talk the day before at the Living Temple in Huntington Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And, just the drive up to Granada, I mean, it was boiling hot. You know, I don't like heat.
Yeah.
And it was over 100 degrees.
What's that?
And then I walk into the, room. It was so hot, it didn't even feel like doing the presentation. And there was all these cameras and everything set up. We didn't even know that Ted from Booktree and Lost Arts Media was going to be there. He's a good friend, and he's a great videographer. We didn't even know that Ted was going to be there. And we walk in, and suddenly, he's there, and he videos it for me, and he gives me the copy, and he uploaded it to Google. So this is all done, spontaneously. It had no plan that it was going to be filmed. And now, can you believe that 80,000 people have watched that?
Amazing. Yeah. It's really
this
great.
This is, fate. I look at it as very fated.
Yeah.
And really glad that we actually did get to film that so that the whole world could see it.
Absolutely.
But the actual talk, itself was basically on psychology. It was on the shadow personality. It was on why we have the political leaders that we do.
Mm.
It was very much about the spirit of rebellion. Because when we're talking about the coming of the planet Pluto, there's many subtitles underneath that.
Yeah.
And one of them is about the descent of the Holy Spirit, the age of revealing, the spirit of rebelliousness. I talked about the consensus trance.
Yeah.
I talked about the shadow personality and about a better relationship, basically, that each human being needs to have, enter into a better relationship with what we would call our darker emotions.
Mm.
This is the angst, the loneliness, the fear, the anger, the violence. These are just terms we've given to parts of ourself.
Yeah.
The angry part of myself that I must suppress because it doesn't get me along with the status quo. Oh, the violent urges that I have. I'm not meant to have those. Jesus will be unhappy and I can't get along in the workplace. So I better become a docile sheep. I better never ever speak up or even own my own emotions. I don't speak up to other people about how I feel. I say I'm just fine. And also, I don't admit to myself. I have no inner dialogue with myself.
Hmm.
So that whenever these darker emotions show up, I medicate them out of existence.
Yeah.
So my talk there was about, for goodness sake, don't do that. These are aspects of yourself. These are your own children. In fact, they're not your children. They're your ancestors.
Hmm.
These are ancestral parts of your own mind that are coming in to talk to you, to waken you up. But you have given yourself over like a bullock to the herd. You're listening to the crack of the whip.
Yeah.
You are under control. In order to belong to the consensus trance, you have stepped out of dialogue with your own self and cunningly given all of these incredible voices within yourself dark and evil names and thrown them into the shadow so that every time they, try to come close to give you counsel and education and spiritual awareness, you got the cork shoved into them, so that you the barbed wire fence around your walls. So this whole concept that the way of the future, Pluto, is also about coming into a better relationship with this, sort of so-called, quote-unquote, dark side of the self.
Yeah, yeah. And during your talk, you spoke of the great need for psychological understanding of man and life. And this is what you're talking about now, correct?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Psychological understanding. Jung himself just was adamant about that in the times to come. He talked about psychic epidemics. He talked about the fact that human beings are not really victimized by external circumstances anymore. It's reverse. People are in anxiety. People are in suicide. People are in depression. People are in delinquency.
Yeah.
People are in dysfunction because of inner gales and storms and earthquakes, inner, psychic. And I know this is a message that, maybe a lot Germans will totally understand, and perhaps the French, but, the rest of the world, England, Ireland, America, nope. It falls on deaf ears. They haven't a clue because the whole beginnings of that comes from an extrovert. So we're dealing with a tremendous extroversion here. And there's a point, where we have to get back to some of these original principles of what the mind is and what the psyche is.
Yeah, yeah.
And also just how recent consciousness is. How very recent it is.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, the selfless man is, as you say, is one who kind of ends up, I guess, unsane or insane or even neurotic, right?
Yeah. Neurotic is a perfect term because It's not, you know, we just use that word today jokingly. Can you believe it? Oh, that person's a bit neurotic. Yeah. Or, hey, that person's compulsive, obsessive.
Yeah.
And we don't even know what these words mean. But, you know, the selfless man, which is the beautifully programmed automaton that the world works overtime to produce, and which you can see outside your door every person that passes by, the perfectly selfless man, as Ayn Rand called it, this is a narcissistic man, a neurotic man, a fragmented man who's basically listening and governed by his ego, not the self.
Yeah.
People have to understand there's a difference between the ego and the self. The ego is an image that you have about yourself, but it's not the self. The ego is just a thought within your head about something. The ego is just, say you take an oak tree. Well, you have an idea of an oak tree in your mind, and then you have a real oak tree that you're standing in front of and touching, you know, or that you might climb up, or you might feel the wood, or you might actually smell the leaves. That's a real oak tree.
Yeah.
But the image in your mind of the oak tree is a product of the ego. Well, the ego also has within itself an image of you. But that image of you that the ego projects and generates is not you. And if you live in servitude to that image of yourself, then it's a narcissistic image.
Yeah.
That has no reality, so you're basically pursuing a dead loss. And you are also in contradistinction to yourself. You're in absence of selfhood, and you're in absence of the true Holy Spirit, which is nothing more than the self of a person. And then you enter into the, you know, you may be qualified then to live in the carnival of this inauthentic life.
Yeah.
But you are without yourself. You're without your selfhood. And it's very important to understand this.
So
you know, and it's not that easy to talk about what a self is, because nobody else can give advice to another about what the self is.
Exactly.
This is something that you discover from within.
Yeah.
The self is not something that you're given at the time of birth. It is not something that you're going to be. It's not something that is for you. It is something you create for yourself in this life through what we call experience. So the self is something you create through your experiences in life. It does not come prepackaged. It's not something that can be installed. And it's not even something that can really be spoken about to you by another person. The only way we can come across what the self is by discovering what the self is not, through what they call a apophatic means. Apophatic, meaning by negation. You study what it is not to find out what it is. It's sort of like the Sherlock Holmes type of you know, deductive reasoning. You discover what the self is not, so you study the ego. You study all the things that the ego is and what the ego has created. And in understanding those falsities, those aberrations, a human being can come across a definition of what the self is. But you cannot turn towards the self itself and try to discover it because, you know, there's a shadow in the way. There's a lot of psychic complexes in the way of that.
You know, on a side note, it feels like today we have these prepackaged, basically, styles that you can choose from, you know, the attitude and everything goes in basically prepackaged stuff that I guess what you're saying here also, you know, that you don't have to discover yourself, basically. You can just choose one of these packages today that there's offered, basically.
That's absolutely right. That's what the media is. That's what government is. That's what teachers are.
Yeah.
First of all, they put you in uniforms in school, or at least they do in some countries, because that's the uniformatization that they want to get you to before they create those new packages for you.
Yeah.
So they strip you of your individuality. Hey, what's that? You're wearing a Rastafarian Bob Marley pin? Get that off. Hey, you're wearing a heavy metal t-shirt? Get that off. Hey, you're wearing rings on your fingers? Get those off. Shorten that hair. Wear that tie. Where's your uniform? You know?
Yeah.
How dare you come in looking like a goth? How dare you, have colored hair?
Yeah.
You know, so they're going to erase your individuality, as they have done.
Yeah.
And then they say, now, folks, you buy into this. So they every day the media is modeling these inauthentic, images. Because remember, if your own idea of yourself is a false, it's an image, then, hey, you can have a whole image industry out there to create new ones for you so that you don't even have to waste the energy even creating an image for yourself. They'll
exactly.
even save you that.
Exactly, yeah. Amazing, you know, and also, of course, you said that, you know, evil men in power, because, you know, they're parasites feeding on a rotten and decaying body politic.
Yeah.
But they are put there by us.
That's right. And that's the key that we talked about in the web stream, The Future of Mankind. You know, people can go on and watch that and see that analysis and digest it. Think about it. Criticize it. You know, come to your own conclusions. Find out if I'm talking rubbish or I'm right. That if the human being is necrotic, if he's narcissistic, he's cruel, endlessly sadistic to himself, if he's what they call masochism, if he's openly sadistic to others, violent, confused, frustrated, riddled with angst, medicated, tranquilized, then can that individual create the society that then acts upon him? Is it a vicious circle in which we create the leaders, you see? And yeah. This, because I actually believe, totally, me personally believe, that you shouldn't really blame the evil status quos that you, because those are just the maggots feeding off the corpse.
The
ego is just the ghost that has arisen from the grave of the self. So if you see vultures above carrion, don't blame the vultures. They're doing their job. In fact, they might even be agents of the Thanatos instinct. They may be they may be agents in their own way, as bad as they are, presiding over the death of the rotten system.
Yeah.
But we have made that system rotten. We have made it anemic. We have anemic religions. We have false teachers. Right? We're living in abnegation of our own spiritual moral duties. Look at today. Look where we are right now, coming up to Christmas. Look at the sanctimoniousness of these bastards, if I can use my Irish.
Yeah.
You know, all year long, people live like sinners, Henrik.
Yeah.
All year long, it's greed, 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 and push the other person down and live immorally and commit treachery and build your own temples out of the ashes of the ruins of other people's sorrow.
Yeah.
But come Christmas, it's sing hymns.
Everybody's friends, yeah.
Yeah. And you know, suddenly give gifts and play the Handel record, you know?
Yeah.
And play some Bach. That, you know what that is? That sanctimonious hypocrisy is what that is. And this is the kind of thing that human beings need to see about themselves. Don't get into judgment about it, just observe it.
Yeah. And this
see how hypocritical it is.
Yeah, and this must create some kind of schizophrenia within ourselves too.
It's the result of the schizophrenia.
Yeah.
it's the result of the inauthentic man.
Yeah. You know, you speak also in your writing of the karmic man and the dharmic man, and that karma is related to guilt.
Oh yeah, if we can turn to that subject. I wanted to do this show on two amazing things, Henrik, and that is, as you said, the outsider, which I think is a fantastic concept, and also the guilt complex. And this connects to an Indian terminology, karma and dharma. Everyone has heard about karma, but there's a reason why you haven't heard about its opposite, which is dharma.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't have a true understanding of what karma is unless you understand what dharma is. But I'm not going to be using these Indian terms because they're so loaded, and again, they don't mean much to the Western mind.
Yeah.
Again, using the Western tradition of psychoanalysis and psychology, we have this thing in the psyche called the guilt complex.
Yeah.
And it's connected to this theory of the outsider. And this is a perfect carry-on from the talk that I did in L.A. It's just, you know, that was already 3 hours something long. We didn't have time to explore this, so I had to cut that off.
Yeah.
But people can consider that our first show here a continuation, always to be listened to in connection with the Future of Mankind talk.
Yeah.
You see, we have been talking about the karmic man. Karma is nothing more than ignorance. And I mean that absolutely, period.
Mm.
Dharma is knowledge. The hidden masters use the same philosophy when they are constantly showing you that one of their major symbols is the checkerboard.
Yeah.
And people have many interpretations of what this board means. Is it light and day? Is it past and future? You know, is it good and evil?
Yeah.
Well, no, it's not. It's about ignorance, which is the black squares, and knowledge, which is the white squares. The Illuminati and the Masons and the Atonists that run our system, they use the checkerboard because they're merely telling you, we don't kill you, necessarily. We outwit you. It's a game.
Yeah.
I mean, death can be part of that game, but we're not just there to massacre you. We're there to outwit you. But we also give you the chance to outwit us. It's a game. So if you can play the game according to the rules, but of course, most people don't even know the rules of the game, but they're saying, if you understand some of the rules of the game, go ahead, try to outmaneuver us. Well, you outmaneuver your rival by knowledge, not by weaponry, and not by hate, but by outwit them. And it's the same thing on this inner psychic level. There's a game being played out, the game of the karmic man and the dharmic man. Karma is ignorance. So if you end your ignorance, you have karma. So you can forget all the Eastern priests and all that Hinduism and Brahmanism and all those liars over there that, again, it's just a Christianity of the East, a priestarchy that's meant to lead you away from your feminine aspect and to, you know, create this androcentric, patrocentric and phallocentric religion.
Mm.
And, of course, they've used these tremendous esoteric concepts to bamboozle people, thinking that, oh my goodness, I'm a sinner, I'm in karma, so unless I do all these good deeds, unless I relinquish and, you know, live the life of a priest, I'll not be saved. Well, no, no, it's nothing to do with that. The original karma was just ignorance. But this connects to the guilt complex, because the main problem of the world, the main problem of life, is that men live these inauthentic lives we've been talking about. But if you live an inauthentic life, say, let's just say, say you are living an inauthentic life as opposed to an authentic life. Authentic life is Dharma. Authentic life is the man who's passionate about what he's really meant to do, what he's found out what it is that he's meant to do on this planet, and he's living that life. He's passionate about it. It doesn't mean he's enlightened. It doesn't mean that he has a life of pure happiness. No, he suffers immensely.
Yeah.
He suffers a great deal. But he's living his passion, like Dali, like Bach, like Escher, you see?
Yeah.
Like these individuals who have found what it is that they're meant to do. But then you have the other man who's in ignorance and who's in karma, who's living an inauthentic life, buying into these falsities that the society and the consensus trance, as we've described endlessly.
Yeah.
But what we have not gone into is this concept of the guilt complex. If you're living an inauthentic life, you have what is known as a primal guilt complex. And do not mistake this as the normal guilt of your normal moral misdemeanors on a daily level that, you know, happen between people. And then you feel sort of guilty. I'm not talking about conscious guilt over your so-called good and evil acts in the world. I'm talking about a subconscious Freudian guilt that all the psychologists know about. And it's not something that you're consciously aware of, but it does dominate your life. And but where does the guilt come from? This is what a lot of people do not explain. It comes from the choice that you make, Henrik, to live as an inauthentic man. It's in the nighttime. It's a choice that you make in the darkness of the subconscious. In the early days of your life, there's a subconscious choice that goes on. When we say, I will not bow to these hypocrites, and I will live as a rebel, well, then you're the man of Dharma, then you're the man of the Holy Spirit, and then you're the man who lives an authentic life. But majority of the human race in this world live an inauthentic life. And from that, it's very, very important to understand what is the child of that inauthenticity. It's the guilt complex, a subconscious form of guilt that is in every single human being you meet, and it's in the eyes of everybody you meet, and it is the glue that holds the cluster together. So we understand now, and I hope in this show we can get into this, about what is the guilt. Because the guilt has a host of other offspring that we need to know about. So today when you're looking at the denial in the world, and the crime in the world, and the misogyny in the world, and the ecocide, and the brutality towards nature and animals, you see, or just even people say the dumbed downness, you know, and the sense of denial. Yes, but these are all branches of a central trunk, just like a genealogical tree. And if you don't understand what the sun at the top of the tree is, if you don't understand what the ancestors, like in a genealogical tree, all the different families can come off of it, but who is the original ancestor? Well, in the psychic genealogical tree, the great demon at the top that gives birth to all these other factors of existential ruin that you see in the world and may lament and may study and may know about. If you do not know about the inauthentic man and the guilt complex, then you cannot really truly understand or deal with these lower forms of pestilence that exist in the world. So no matter how you try to remedy consensus trance, you see, or stupidity or ignorance or vindiction, or any function that you can perceive is sociologically or psychologically down the line, unless you understand the nature of the guilt complex and that it comes from a man's decision to live inauthentically. It's based on choice. And then from that comes the guilt complex and the whole other problems that we have inwardly and outwardly.
So this is this something then we can change consciously, or how do we kind of change path, you know, to start live a authentic life? How is that possible? Can we change?
That's right. This is the beauty of the conscious mind. So people need to come into a better understanding of their conscious willpower. You know, the whole man changes this dynamic, and his life is a attempt to change this dynamic from the karmic life of ignorance to the dharmic life of awareness. From the light, from the world of the guilt complex, because obviously it's an equation. The man who turns on his inauthenticity lowers the pressure of his guilt complex and therefore lives in a completely different way. But let me just go into, I want to really paint a picture of this guilt complex for people. and understand that when we're seeing this loss of identity and this loss of selfhood and the fake allegiances, see, all these fake allegiances that we use when we're getting involved with other people, when we run to marriage, when we run into dysfunctional relationships as an escape from ourselves, that's a form of authenticity that's causing enormous damage. And again, we are subconsciously guilty from that. We have to understand all of different ways in which we run away from the selfhood. But let me just point out some of the branches that do come off of this tree.
Mm-hmm.
At the top of the tree, you have the sun, which is this guilt. But from that, don't you see, comes the justification. Because now that we're in an inauthentic life, the ego then goes, well, then I'll justify that. Here's all the list of reasons why I live an inauthentic life and why I've made that decision.
Mm-hmm.
So psychologically aware people know about this concept of justification. And you can see it all around in everyone. You can see it in yourself and in the people around you.
Yeah.
So justification is one of the main branches that comes off this tree.
Hmm.
And so some people may call that self-delusion.
Yeah.
Then there comes another complex which we need to know about, which is anesthetization or escapism and habituation. That's another branch.
Yeah.
Because now that you know that you've chosen a false way and that you're living in a certain kind of pathological life, you're not living the true life, and you subconsciously understand this, then another fashion comes in, which is to anesthetize yourself against the life that you're living.
Hmm.
So you keep living the inauthentic life, but you basically become this mindless zombie who just goes for the lowest chakra types of, you know, pursuits.
Yeah.
Endless sexuality, endless sweetness, endless addictiveness, endless, you know, immersion in the different groups that exist, you see.
Yeah.
Or just a simple obsession with the domestic minutiae, which is habituation. We call it habit.
Yeah.
The endless routine of just sitting in the car, going to work in the morning, coming back, I'm a programmed machine, I don't think, you know, I just let the system take care of me.
Yeah.
I just use the handrails that have been provided for me. Or I'm a housewife and I just look after my kids and I just wash the dishes and I just chat to the neighbors. You see, the endless habituation. And I just buy what's in the latest catalog or what they're showing us on TV.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And this is this anesthetization in short. And that's a whole study in itself for psychologists. Then we have the, we talked about the justification. We have the embellishment. And this is where the media comes in. Okay, we say, we know we've chosen this inauthentic life. And you know something? It is a bit banal. So the ego now, we're asking the ego to keep on putting the quarter in, keep on putting the money in, so that we'll have new, exciting things to embellish this hell that we're living in.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, media, give us some more, you know, American Gladiators. Give us some more holidays in the sun. Give us some, you know, the better model of car.
Yeah.
Give us the new heroes, the new fashion. You know, turn us on. Don't you understand we're living in the absence of ourselves, and you want to keep, you know, the baby needs a new rattle, a new toy every 5 seconds.
Yeah.
But that's excusable in a child. It's not excusable in an adult. So we have now a cult of embellishment. Wall-to-wall inanimate, being, you know, manufactured at high expense by all the corporations in the world, you know, sort of like in this Blade Runner type existence that we're living.
Yeah.
Overcrowded, overpopulated, dumbed down, you know, moronic. Well, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, keep it coming. And people are heavily addicted to this. There's whole corporations that people work for to embellish the mediocrity of our lives. Then another branch, which is very, very important for people to realize, is the clustering effect, the clustering with others. Because if you have guilt, Henrik, and I have guilt, you know, and the guy next door has guilt, and the people at school have guilt, in order to feel some kind of warmth in this inauthentic existence, we cluster with others in the herd way. Just like when you go into the pet store, you ever go to look at a pet store and go to the rat cage? All the rats are happily sleeping one on top of the other. Right? They don't all sleep in a line, one beside each other. They have a big mountain where all the rats will climb on top of each other for bodily warmth.
Yeah.
And that's the collective. That's what human beings do in their energy. They cluster with one another because that gives them the bodily heat, or it gives them the psychic well-being that they don't have individually.
Hmm.
And look again, look where we are doing this talk, Christmas. Where do all of the traditions come from? These collectivized, I mean, if people find it hard to understand what it means by clustering, and look around you right now at this season, right now. I mean, you know, it's lovely and all of that, but let's step back from a moment and look at the reason why people sit around the community table, you see, with the dead chicken in the middle. I believe that in Germany they have the Stammtisch, right?
Yeah.
Concept, which is a wonderful concept where it's very much about the table and everybody sits around, you know. In Denmark, of course, they have that. I believe that in your country, in Sweden, they have the Saint Lucia.
Sure. Sancta Lucia.
Right, which is the Festival of Lights.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's just passed, isn't it? It was December 13th or something?
13th, that's correct, yes.
Right, so what is that? I mean, forget a minute for the trappings. Forget a minute about being immersed in its beauty. What is it? It is a way for people to feel that they're connected to other people. A festival of lights.
Yeah.
Where people come together in some way. The Stammtisch is when people sit around a table with the lager and say, we are together. This table represents our togetherness.
Mm.
And do you know that in, I think it's Thailand, I think, they have a festival called the Loi Krathong. And Loi Krathong is exactly like the Swedish Festival of Nights, of Lights.
Hmm.
There's barely a difference. And this is over in Thailand.
Hmm.
In India, you have the Diwali festival, which in which millions of people gather. You have the Hanukkah, right, for the Jewish people.
Yeah.
In Ireland, you have the wake, which is often when somebody has died. But the whole idea of the community coming together and crying and mourning and laughing and drinking.
Mm.
In Germany, I believe you have the beer killer, right?
Mm. Yeah.
The concept, again, so if you just look into our world, and look at the sports and the rights, understand what this clustering with others is. It's a way to give warmth to the inauthentic man.
Hmm.
And then further down the tree, we have, of course, the denial and the self-hate. You know, again, all of these are emanations of and depression. And we also have the projection onto other people, which I spoke about a lot in the LA talk, about that once you're in an inauthentic life, you have to blame others now, not yourself, for the choices that you've made.
Hmm.
All the way up even the political ladder.
Yeah.
And we have the defense complex. So a lot of things that people know about and psychologists have to treat. But again, I want people to really pay attention to the fact that all of these are offspring of a central complex that is unconscious. It's the guilt complex.
Mm.
And from that also comes this escape from responsibility. You know, there's a famous quote from the geneticist, Dobzhansky, and he says that man knows that he is accountable for his acts. He has acquired the knowledge of good and evil. This is a dreadfully heavy load to carry, and no other animal has had to withstand anything like it. There is a tragic discord in the soul of man, among the flaws in his human nature. This is one far more serious than the pain or even of childbirth. You know, Nietzsche said that man is the only creature that has to constantly overcome himself in order to live fully.
Yeah.
And Henrik, that burden that people, you know that the inauthentic life carries with it a great responsibility. A constant renewing of yourself every day, a more healthy choice mechanism. They don't want to carry that. And so they inherit them. By choosing the inauthentic life, you bring in the new world order, you bring in clustering, you bring in denial, violence, projection.
Mm.
So like I was talking about in that Future of Mankind talk in Los Angeles, once you choose subconsciously the inauthentic life, then you bring into existence the whole matrix of the lie that you see in front of you. And you bring in the media, as you've been saying, to, you know, create this. And also what the media do, we have to understand, is that, remember, one of the other things that they do is to traumatize you into making these wrong decisions.
Yeah, yeah.
And the media is the main generator, through the news and other means, of creating this traumatization. There's a quote that I used in the talk, and it said, when faced with a life-threatening situation, the reptilian hindbrain, the most primitive part of the human brain, switches off all activity except that which keeps you alive. It sends us the subconscious message, do not move, breathe, or blink, or you will be seen and attacked. All right? And this comes from the book Being Human by Sohelin and Alicia Thurn. And this is beautifully stated, that when man is living in his lower chakras, in his inauthentic state, he is now a creature of the limbic drives, then it is very easy for the whip crackers and the masters to constantly keep you in a state of fear and trauma so that you remain there.
Yeah. And, you know, to kind of, I guess, evolve from this, as Nietzsche said there, are we faced with this? Is that our only option, so to speak, to constantly try to, I guess, in that sense, improve on ourselves and you know, try harder to you know, get to know ourselves and stuff like this? Or where do we kind of end up? What should we do here? That's
well, we'll
question.
Get the solutions in a minute. The solutions are very, very important because that's what my work is all about. It's not just pointing out the problem. you know, but getting to an understanding of what the solutions are. But first we have to, I want people to really get into this apophatic, you know, type of mindset, mm-hmm. where they observe what is, before that they start meditating on the metaphysical abstractia of what, you know, what is not.
Mm-hmm.
People have to discover what is. What is the reality that is in front of them? Why do we live in this collective anonymity and this, you know, ubiquitous extroversion?
Mm-hmm.
You know, somewhere along the line, you remember when I was talking originally in the Atlantis book about the traumas, the earth traumas and the war of the gods,
yeah.
creating the ego?
Sure.
And the birth of the ego, we also talk about that in the web stream.
Mm-hmm.
We develop this sense of interior life from that trauma. Do you know that before the trauma, before the birth of the ego, there was no living inside your own head. There was no idea of a individual subjective consciousness within yourself. You lived entirely what we might want to call externally now, but you lived in nature. Your mind was nature, and therefore you could never go wrong because nature was your brain.
Yeah.
The trauma so... you know, neuroticized man, that he not only had the formation of his ego, but he formed this divisive self where you have somebody within your brain, somebody within your head, the you, so-called,
mm-hmm.
and you have this external body, physical body. You divided yourself off from the body, and you divided yourself off from nature. So the primal division is 50,000 years or so old.
Mm-hmm.
Man did not live inside his own head, and this... state of living inside your own head as an individualized concept is the reason for the existential trauma. See, animals don't think about thinking. Animals don't consciously think about their own thought processes. The animal does not think, oh, am I depressed today? Let me think about that. You see, and neither did human beings at one point.
Yeah.
But we can't even really describe that state because we're not in that state now. We're in a divided state in which everybody has their own mental furniture. Everybody has their own mental, you know, complexes inside that are just like disheveled furniture thrown inside.
Mm.
You may present a nice, you know, garden, and you may paint your door and your windowsills for the outsiders to think, oh, what a lovely house. But if you were to go inside that person's house, meaning if you were able to see their inner landscape, you wouldn't believe the havoc. It would be like somebody in Alice in Wonderland, you know. You go inside the house, and everything's topsy-turvy, everything's wonky.
Mm.
All the furniture just piled up on top of each other. People living like in a warehouse with boxes and boxes and boxes of junk over their head,
yeah.
ready to crush them. And the insane people are those people that the whole mess has fallen down on their heads,
yeah.
and they are crushed.
Hmm.
But most people are pretty insane. If they're not insane, they're in a toxic situation, living in the dark, full of cobwebs and, you know, wonky furniture, like a sort of a funny farm, something you go and buy at Toys R Us, all this wonky furniture for kids.
Yeah.
But that's what most people's mental architecture is, man, regardless of the outside.
Yeah.
And some of the people at the top of the political spectrum, they're in the worst neurotic state than anybody else, and they're in the lead. They're in control.
And what of the outsider, then, in all of this?
Well, the outsider is the one who obviously, his dynamic is very interesting because he doesn't have this ubiquitous extroversion. He's a person who is inner-directed, not outer-directed. Once you give up the right rulership of the self and once you give up the authentic life, you then are absolutely dependent on, you're not a rebel, you're a conformist. You're dependent then on what George Bush and Blair say.
Yeah.
You're dependent on what society creates. You're dependent on what the corporation penthouse guys are going to create for you. And they bring in more order, more cameras, more surveillance, more security, more this, more that, you know, more handrails, more. It's like a building that's going to be condemned.
Yeah.
It has to have the scaffolding put on it. It's like a rotten tooth. Every time you touch it, it's agonizing and it's wobbly.
Mm.
Well, the inauthentic man lives in a tower. Let's say he lives in this Tower of Babylon,
yeah.
this ivory tower, that's constantly wobbling because it wasn't built on a straight foundation, Henrik.
Mm, yeah.
So no matter what wind comes, you see the tower carelessly moving back and forth and to and fro. It's very frightening to live in the realm of the ego.
Yeah.
Because no matter what addition you put, or how you maneuver furniture, or how many more tiers you build onto that, you know, or how much embellishment, the tower itself is teetering.
Mm.
And we are in that period now in the whole of civilization is teetering.
Yeah.
But the outsider is a person, for one of many, many reasons, who will not medicate himself, who will not run into this, and who has chosen or has been guided by his higher guides, because he's actually in touch with his higher guides, to live an authentic life. And I believe that, you know, through the divination arts, the work that I do, the turning on to astrology and to tarot and to these mirrors that show you the self. These are assisting people to get in touch.
Yeah.
Subjects of numerology, you see, looking into the mirrors, looking into to discover who and what we are through the pristine mirrors of our forefathers. Whatever way that you come upon the authentic life, this is a person who, by definition, does not have the immense guilt complex that others do. Because remember, we said that the guilt complex comes out of living an inauthentic life.
Mm.
So if you're living an authentic life, you don't have a guilt complex, or you have a much lesser one.
Yeah.
And therefore, if you don't have a guilt complex, you're then not a, you're a person who doesn't have a lot of these other, epidemics, these other diseases that I said come off of this hideous genealogical invert tree of life that, you know, come from. Now, you may, that doesn't mean that you live in happiness or total, you know, you're this very, very supreme, you have great joy because you're a person who's tuned into the matrix, the higher form.
Yeah.
You're tuned in, you're being guided by your higher guides.
Mm-hmm.
But you suffer, the outsider, Henrik, is one who suffers for other people.
Mm-hmm.
His problem comes from his empathy with those who are in the sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So to understand this person, he may not be necrotic or neurotic, but unfortunately his trouble, and if you get onto my blog, you keep seeing what I would consider outsiders commenting on my blog about the lives that they have to live and how difficult it is to share with their family and to share with people around them, you see?
Yeah, sure.
And all the people out there, I hope many of the people listening to this show, are outsiders, people who have not conformed or conform enough just behind a quiet mask so that you can obviously survive because the system leaves you very little other choice. But they feel outsiders. They feel estranged and isolated and alienated. And why I try to get into this is because I want to explain to these people what their alienation is really born out of.
Yeah.
Your alienation is born with your identification and your empathy with the fallen, your brothers and sisters who are in this dumbed-down state. I call it the Hamlet complex, because if you read Hamlet properly, you will discover that his greatest malaise, his greatest ennui, his greatest depression was not from just having to deal with evil or pernicious people. It was from actually being in their presence. Just the fact that he lived amongst them was enough to cause him enormous strain in his mind.
Yeah.
So if you live in a sea of inauthentic souls, Henrik, it will always smell bad to you. And therefore, you might bleed for the condition of others. Now, I stress that that authentic men, the outsiders, have to be very careful about this, because if you don't know about this, it could drive you mad. And I see a lot of this dementia creeping into the outsider's mind. The outsider must become detached from what he sees. He must become, you know, separate. Because if he over-empathizes or over-sympathizes or tries to get in there and re-hardwire the minds of people that he has no responsibility to do that, it can destroy him.
Yeah.
And this is very important, Henrik, for the countdown to 2012, because you're going to see more and more dysfunction.
Mm.
You're going to see more and more inauthenticity and all of its offspring being created. And I talked about this a little bit in the presentation, but if people are not aware of what is happening, they're going to want to dive in there, you see, sacrificially almost, and give up their own precious lives or precious life energy to those people who are never going to change.
You know,
so there needs to be a change in the mentality of the outsider, of the healer, of the teacher, so that they become a little bit more detached, so that they can preserve their own sanctity and their own state, because you're not responsible for other people. It doesn't matter what other people do. It doesn't matter what other people think, say, or act towards you. Like we were talking about the meaning of enlightenment before.
Yeah,
that it's
yeah.
not something to do with luminescence. It's something to do with lightness and weight.
Yeah, this
so it is with the enlightened person is somebody who doesn't give a damn what other people say, think, or do towards them. Period.
You know, that's a
go ahead.
Sorry.
Well, on the journey to enlightenment, you see, on the journey to that space, especially the man who bleeds for his brothers does care very greatly what other people say, do, and think.
Yeah.
But we're getting into such toxic times now that those rules, you know, are not going to apply. And that the pain and suffering that comes in the outsider, the outsiders are going, why is my life so painful? I've committed myself to truth. I've studied all the time. I've made so many sacrifices. I can't understand why I'm still under such a burden. Your burden is from the empathy that you have towards other people. It's from a higher level courting that you have to these fallen souls.
Yeah.
But see these people as fallen and broken, You don't need to hate them for it. You just see it's a reality. And you can't, the doctor cannot get into the bed of the patient with him. Right? He has to do what he can, and then he has to pull back, and he has to constantly be recuperating his own health.
Yeah.
It's like in that movie Nostradamus, where the whole town is in plague. Everybody's running around insane, and you see Nostradamus standing at the well, washing himself down. He strips himself off naked, and he washes himself down near the well. And there's a beautiful scene where this existentially aware, authentic man is just standing in the middle of absolute chaos. And I refer people to that movie, you know, and to the movie of Herzog, the Nosferatu, the Vampire, where Lucy, the heroine, is also in a state of sovereignty, while everybody else is falling over the precipice of insanity.
Hmm.
And Lucy, what does that word mean? The light.
Yep, sure. It does.
So, you know, we talk about solutions. Jung said that, if I can quote him, he said that a great change of our psychological attitude is imminent. That is certain. We need more psychology. We need more understanding of human nature, because the only real danger that exists is man himself. He is the great danger, and we are pitifully unaware of it. We know nothing of man, far too little. His psyche should be studied, because we are the origin of all coming evil.
Hmm.
So this is the beginning, the middle, and the end. It's the A, B, and C of it. It's the alpha and the omega.
Yeah,
it's the bookends of the beginning, you know, of the work that people like myself do. I mean, I open my Atlantis book with statements like this, and I close my life's work with statements like this. It is all based on our own name that needs to be studied.
You know, Michael, we are actually totally out of time here now, but, you know, you sent me some references to the writings of Paul Levy and also that we should get into, I guess, during the beginning of our next program on just these topics of enlightenment and about the light and what people think of it and so forth.
Yeah, we definitely can. There's people who want to know about the shadow complex and how the shadow works. Can you refer to the Los Angeles talk that I did? You know, this is something I absolutely insist people get into now. Paul Levy, who's a very interesting author, his website is Awaken in the Dream.
Yeah.
AwakenInTheDream.com. You'll go there, you'll see, you can get to it by way of my blog. So if people don't have time to write that down, just go to the Michael Tesorian blog and go to the page on enlightenment, and you'll see the link there to Paul Levy, Enlightened or Illumined by Darkness. Go in there and discover why we have a misunderstanding of the word enlightenment. Because if you think that it has to do with the concept of light, then you always have an opposition to darkness. So when people like myself come along and say, listen to the dark voice, listen to the darkness within you, it makes a contradiction.
Hmm.
How can you be enlightened and listen to the darkness? Well, that's because you have a misunderstanding of what enlightenment means.
Yeah.
You can, in fact, be illumined by the darkness. You can, in fact, be enlightened by the darkness. But not darkness as understood as an opposite to light. So maybe we can, you know, get into that next time. But certainly browse those sites and you know, check out the information or email me for more information, and we'll get into it.
Absolutely, and I will link the I will have these links up in correlation to this program. And check out MichaelTesorion.com. That's Michael TSARION.com, and also of course is your blog, Michael. It's mstar.blogspot.com, right?
That's MTSAR.
Yeah.
Yeah. So MTSAR.blogspot.com. But if you go to MichaelTesorian.com, it'll lead you through to all the other websites that we have.
Wonderful, wonderful. So again, Michael, I'm looking forward to next program very much, and thank you for coming on today. And we will continue in a month.
Great pleasure. Thank you, Henrik. Next time.
Michael will be back on the program the third Thursday of next month. That's January 2007. In the meantime, check out redicecreations.com and tune into our radio show each Sunday and Thursday. And tell folks about it. Help us grow and expand. Thank you all for tuning in. Big thanks to all your wonderful subscribers out there who keep this show going. Also, thanks to Big Bro in the control room, Fredrik, and we will talk more soon, so take it easy, take care. This is Henrik Palmgren signing off.